as juniors. Give you two different terms here. So these definitions come from Paramahansa Yogananda out of Man's Eternal Quest. Yes, I know that this is not a Buddhist text. You think I really care? Listen very carefully. One of the many definitions that he has for Dharma. What do we think Dharma is?
Law.
Yeah, because we're all Orthodox Jews, right? So we have like this very serious law we have to follow. If you break it, then you get a citation or you go to jail, right?
No, it's a natural.
A natural law.
Yeah.
The way the universe works.
Yeah.
So like gravity
the
and basic
truth, yes.
Physics and all that crap is what we think Dharma is.
It's part of it.
So if you go and you get a degree in mathematics, then you're like all of a sudden doing Dharma. Yeah, I hear stuff like that. That's people do, they do define it like that, then that's crap. It's not the structure of the universe. The universe doesn't, those laws aren't called Dharma. That's called your mind. Structure of the world operates because your mind created it that way. That's not Dharma. Because you don't take refuge in the structure of the world that your mind created. Right? Nonsense. Dharma, spelled as a small d, also means like the thoughts in your head. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're talking about, because nobody takes refuge. Who takes refuge in thoughts in their head? If you do, it's going to be terrible. It's not going to work. I mean, that's how you end up here. It's because the thoughts in your head led you astray. Didn't help. Listen. Here's one of the things Yogananda, this is only one, because he has, every book he has a different definition of Dharma. But so does Buddhism. He says, Dharma is the eternal principles of righteousness that uphold all of creation, man's inherent duty to live in harmony with these principles. In other words, that it is the structure of cause and effect, it's the structure of the Eightfold Path, it's the structure of the Paramitas. Because if you don't align yourself with the Paramitas, the perfections, there's six of them, by the way, everything's going to go wrong. If we take the first of the Eightfold Path, right view, you just read Heart Sutra. If you do not have the proper view of skandhas, the proper view of dhatus, the proper view of ayatanas, you will not be able to live in accordance with the way. The universal way, so everything's going to fall apart. Here's the term I was looking for. There is a phrase called Sanatan Dharma. That's two words, Sanatan and Dharma. The literal translation of that from the Sanskrit is eternal religion. Paramahansa Yogananda says, the name given to the body of Vedic teachings that came to be called Hinduism, after Greeks designated the people on the banks of the river, Hindus, as Hindus. But this specific body of Vedics, so if we go way back before there are any Hindu sects as we know them today. Certainly long before Buddhism. Although, important to note, this is the kind of Buddhism that Shakyamuni himself was practicing. Sanatan Dharma with Shakyamuni's personal practice. As a practitioner of Sanatan Dharma, he had all kinds of deities that he worked with. Many of those still exist today in the Buddhism. Big shocker, right? The goddess Tara. Nobody ever says Buddha Tara. They always call her goddess Tara. Isn't that kind of an interesting note? Does anybody ever put two and two together? I thought we as Buddhists hated all gods and were completely atheists. We don't have gods. Then why do we have a goddess Tara who happens to be one of the biggest players in all of yogic Buddhism? She's gigantic. In fact, they go so far as to be completely blasphemous and say she is the mother, the divine mother of all Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. Should be careful, because we're getting a little crazy here talking about a divine mother. I thought we Buddhists don't believe in any of that crap. Isn't that true? How many have that understanding of Buddhism, that we don't mess around with gods? Anybody have that idea? Am I preaching to a choir here? Because I'm not going to give this talk if all of you already understand what I'm going to be saying.
We all had that thought that we are supposed to be atheists.
Yeah.
So keep going.
Well, I have the thought that, you know, okay, so maybe as Buddhists we can have gods, but we really downplay them and make them small. Tara is not small. I hate to break it to you. Definitely not small. Go to China. Anybody ever heard of Kuan Yin? Okay. Yes, historically and academically... Hey, get off my seat. You're not a llama. Get off of there. That's my cat. He's not supposed to be on my tiger skin. Listen. Academically, Kuan Yin is supposed to be this Avalokitesvara Bodhisattva, this image of great compassion. But because in the Chinese mind, men never represent compassion at all, they turned Avalokitesvara into a woman in order to have something that you can look at, that you can go, oh yeah, like a mother. Okay, now we get it. Maybe you don't know this, but Kuan Yin didn't stay that way. In Chinese culture, Kuan Yin has become the representation of, I'm going to say it, Divine Mother. Ooh, snap, burn. All of a sudden, we got this huge goddess. And for the Chinese, there's nothing bigger than Kuan Yin, except for maybe who?
Amitabha.
Amitabha Buddha. And in fact, Amitabha Buddha and Kuan Yin, hand in hand. If Amitabha wasn't a celibate monastic Buddha, they'd be consorts together. I mean, they're that close. Kuan Yin's not, so she's like, what's up? And Amitabha is like, hey, calm down, I'm monastic, right? But they're very, very close. They do everything together. They even share the same Pure Land.
Same bed.
Yeah, sleep in the same bed. Like Gandhi, still celibate. They sit on each other's crowns. Who's in the crown of Amitabha? That's Amitabha when he is not monastic. He's long life Buddha. Same guy, though. I don't know how. Maybe he just gets rid of his vows for a little while, puts on crown and all these robes, and then there's Kuan Yin in his crown. Kuan Yin always has Amitabha in his crown. Very important. The other one we have, and according to a number of tantric sources, the other one is Vajrakalaya. And the Vajrakalaya, according to these sources, is the actual deity. Anyone know what the word deity means?
God.
God. In the Sanskrit, they don't use the word deity, because that's not a Sanskrit word. Actually, in Sanskrit, they use the word Dev or Devi. Dev being masculine god, Devi being a goddess. The word Devas means multiple gods. Means more than one. There's a whole class of them. And there's all different kinds. Buddha practiced the Dev or Deva Vajrakalaya. Here's what happened. Shakyamuni denies very clearly in the sutras, he denies a manipulating creator God. He refuses the idea that there is this one soul individual being who created everything and all the people in it and has some kind of divine game plan that they're all supposed to behave a certain way. And if they don't, then they're all naughty. And if they're all naughty, then they got to go somewhere and burn and fry or freeze to death. And in that game plan, he creates this other guy to come down and fix them all. And if they believe in them, then that's great. If they don't, then they fry. That Buddha roundedly rejected that whole idea. He said, that is horseshit. There's nothing in control like that. Nothing. So then they said, oh, well, then you're atheist. He said, no, I'm not atheist. And you guys know this story. And they said, okay, so you're not atheist. That means you believe in God, i.e. the creator God. That's the topic of the discussion. And the Buddha says, no, I don't believe in a creator God. Now Buddha is kind of twisting the thing around. He's taking control of the conversation. The guy says, okay, so you say that you don't believe in one, and then when you are confronted about that, you deny that that's what you believe. So which is it? Do you believe in one or not? And the Buddha says, no. And he says, so you admit it. He says, that's not what I said no to. The guy says, then explain to us, good sir, what it is that you're saying no to. And the Buddha says, your question. Now, are you ready for this? Listen very carefully. I want you to be very intelligent. Use your intelligence and listen to this very, very carefully. I'm quoting Shakyamuni Buddha. The World Honored One says, I am denying your question because your question concerns direct immediate experience and whether I have direct immediate experience of this kind of deva or not will have no bearing on you at all. It's entirely personal experience. And no one should base any practice upon it. Meaning, if the Buddha had a direct experience of a god, he's not going to create a whole religion based on it. If he did not have a direct experience of a god, he's not going to create a whole religion about it. He says the existence or non-existence of a god is entirely and solely an individual direct immediate experience. The topic is still creator. Are you listening to me? Creator. He's not talking about any other form of God. You have to remember, we're talking about Sanatana Dharma. That's long before Hinduism. There's 100,000 gods in it, of all different classes, all different kinds. Enlightened ones, unenlightened ones, powerful ones, weak ones, all different kinds. But this discussion is only one class of them. One that creates. That's the Buddha's response. Later in the same sutra, the Buddha says, these single things, any one of this list, if they are completely recalled at the time of death, they will lead a practitioner directly to the state of bliss openness, nirvana. Gives a list. If you think about the qualities of the Tathagata, at the time of death, one shall attain liberation. If you think at the time of death about the Buddha Dharma, you attain your liberation. If at the time of death you, and he goes through this whole list, do you remember cause and effect? Do you remember the teachings of karma and klesha? Do you remember... And he goes through. You just need one of them. If you can remember it, you can attain your liberation. Halfway through the list, not the end, but halfway through the list, the Buddha says, and we're going to translate to Sanskrit. If a practitioner at the time of their death remembers any of the gods, they attain liberation. Does that sound like Buddhism? Has anybody ever heard Buddhism say something like that? That if you remember the practice, the pujas, and you remember the attributes of the gods, in general, or one in particular, by doing so, you can attain nirvana. Who's ever heard Buddhism taught like that? If you are well acquainted with the founder of Buddhism, Shakyamuni Buddha, then you would say, oh yeah, of course it was taught like that. Because he talks about them all the time. In fact, in most of our sutra, we can look in a sutra, and the Buddha gives this whole huge talk, and it will say, and at the end of the Tathagata, the world-honored one giving this talk, all of the gods and the asuras and the blah, blah, blahs, and all rejoiced. Some of them even attain enlightenment. Those gods that don't have enlightenment, they attain enlightenment. There are three very, very important deities, gods, that are big-time active players in Buddhism today. Not in America, but if you leave America, there are three real big ones, and you all know them. Well, one of them you may not. The first one you all know, which is goddess Tara. I mean, almost everybody's familiar with Tara. The second one, a lot lesser known, I think, is Vajrakalina. Most people are like, I don't really know anything about that. I've heard the name thrown around here and there. If you hung out with me at all, you'll hear that name now and then. Although he's super secret, so most people don't know a whole lot about him. But he's also one of those, I mean, he's a giant, giant player, and he is, in fact, a god. His whole story is that he was a created demon in order to overcome a more powerful demon, and in doing so attained his total enlightenment and became a god. And having attained enlightenment, vowed to always remain a god. That's Vajrakalina. Okay, so here's the third one. And this, my own personal teacher. You have a picture of him up on the wall there. He sits up on our shrine there at Blue Lotus, at least I'm pretty sure he does. He used to, anyhow. Sewan Sitar Rinpoche, my Tantra master, his personal, like, heartfelt god that he practiced all the time more than anything else. You all know him. His name's Ganesha. Yeah, that's right. Ganesh. It's a god with a human body and an elephant head. Oh, you thought he was Hindu? No. Sanatan Dharma, way before. The Buddha never rejected Sanatan Dharma. In fact, what he thought he was doing when he was giving his teachings was the same thing that that Martin Luther guy thought he was doing to the Roman Church. Which was what?
Reformation.
Reformation! Fixing the problems! Buddha was like, okay, look, we've been at this for how many centuries? For so long, we don't even remember who the people were that wrote this stuff that we're practicing. Yet we're all still practicing it. See, I'm sitting under this tree practicing Vajrakalina right now. Look, I got my purr. See Shakyamuni Buddha doing this with his purr. His spike. You know, he's doing this whole thing. He's doing pujas. Incense, butter lamps, and he teaches all his students how to do it. He says, when you make offerings to me, you're going to do artis. Namo Shakyamuni Buddhaya. Yeah, that's what they're doing. And he teaches them how to do artis. He's like, I want incense, I want lamps, I want perfume, flowers, food, I want yogurt, milk, all of that. Wash my feet, right? The whole thing. Artis. And he's like, but we have a problem when we're practicing this stuff. We've corrupted it. The priest went all crazy. They went nuts. They're all too wealthy. They're not really doing their job. They don't even, I mean, they just do stuff because they do pujas just out of habit. They don't even understand what it is they're doing. Nobody's teaching any Dharma anymore. The whole thing's a mess. And he said, so I'm here to fix this. So people can attain their enlightenment. We waste too much time in all of these other discussions that have nothing to do with enlightenment. So I'm going to bring it right back down. He never said, by the way, we're no longer Sanatan Dharma. Sign the line right here, you get a new membership card, I'm making a new religion. You're all Myerists now. not what he did. He didn't say, look, I got struck by lightning, so give me that ladder. That's what we're going to use. We're not going to use a ladder. He didn't do that. Although he did say, give me the wheel off that cart. Look, see these spokes? Right? And he starts teaching about a wheel. But here's the thing. He never said, we're somehow not Sanatam Dharmist. Ever. So people are like, well, we want to follow you. He's like, okay, but we're not doing the whole sannyasa thing. I'm not going to make you swamis. Because that order blows. It sucks. So I'm going to give you something way harder. I'm going to create this new monastic system. And you're going to be called bhiksu. Which means complete renunciant. No hair, nothing. Because, you know, swamis, I don't know if you know this, but though they do have some vows, you know, like celibacy and all that, they can have money. Oh, they can have loads of it. They can dress super nice. They can have long hair. They can have beards. They can, you know, whatever they want. They can have cool hairstyles with a little flip if they want one. It's true. If you don't believe me, go see Brother Neil Ananda. He's a swami. Has really cool hair. Listen. They can do that kind of stuff. Shakyamuni's like, no, we're not doing that. You're going to wear rags. I don't want you doing anything that the Swami order does. And then we're going to make a whole priest class that are not going to be Brahmins. You're not going to be that just because you were born into it. You're not going to be given privilege just because you have the name. You're only going to be a priest because you can demonstrate some realization. And the manifest actual accomplishment in this path. And that will be my priest and the monastic groups. That still does not make us not Sanatam Dharmist. We're still not that. Now look, after 10 years of teaching, somebody finally said, hey, what are we calling ourselves? 10 years of hanging out with this guy who's teaching Dharma. Right? They got funny looking robes compared to the other people. Because the swamis are like all in their fine silk, you know, and they're got their, you know. And they have their gold and silver bracelets and all, because they can wear jewelry. So they're all decked out in their stuff. And then you have the guy sitting next to him with a shaved head, wearing rags, stinks. Woo! Body odor's terrible. He's half starved because he only gets to eat one meal a day. And you got that guy sitting next to him. And for 10 years, he's teaching all these people. And finally, somebody says, what are we calling ourselves? And guess what the Buddha says? Anyone know what his response is? Anyone? Anyone want to guess? No? No takers. He doesn't answer!
Nailed it!
Yeah! You guys nailed it! Good job! You said nothing, just like him. That was his response. He said nothing! Why? Because he didn't create a new religion. That was not part of his program. He did not have that thought. Oh, I'm going to make a new religion so I can get a giant mansion, really nice cars, I can get a group of followers, I can get... Look, Buddha never received a paycheck. He never even went inside any building anyone ever gave him, other than he would go in to teach reluctantly and then immediately leave. He wouldn't have anything to do with the organization that people were building around him. He wouldn't. Even when they said, we're going to make statues of you, he's like, oh, knock that crap off. Well, we want to have Tonkas. He's like, no. What can we have? So he steps in the sand and he goes, you see that? My footprint? That's all you get. Later, of course, he changes his mind because, you know, people are like, we're people. We have problems. And so he says, fine, you can have some support. But look, he didn't want anything to do with an institution or an organization. So he gave no name. Does anyone know how he became Buddhist?
Few hundred years later,
after the demise of the traditional Sanatana Dharma, and then became this new kind of Hinduism, which we technically do refer to as modern Hinduism, recreated according to Patanjali's and all of that, so it's a whole new thing. Those Hindus said, oh yeah, those are the people that follow Buddha. You know what we call people that follow something? Ist. So, if you're a fan, how many of you like NFL? Anyone? Oh, thank God. Whew! Alright, does anyone like any kind of sport at all? No sport people. Alright?
Soccer.
Football.
Soccer? Okay, alright, fine. Then I'm going to pick Chelsea, whether you like them or not. So, if you guys are fans of football, and you follow Chelsea as your favorite football team, you are Chelseaist. What do you believe in? Chelseaism.
We actually say footballist.
Footballist.
The one who plays.
As in, you follow the system that the team Chelsea uses, their football philosophy, in order to win games. That's what you believe in. Chelseaism. That specific. So we add ism and ist to whatever it is that we latch on to and follow. Now, 300-500 years after Shakyamuni Buddha, his image is in every temple. All of them. He's even there today. You can go to Vedanta Society. There's a picture of Shakyamuni Buddha. You can go out to... there's loads of systems and they have pictures of Buddha. And I remember seeing Buddhists get all upset at pictures of Buddha drawn in the traditional Hindu artistic style. And they get mad about that. The ones that follow Brahma, the 10 incarnations of Brahma. What are those guys called again? The
Vishnuites?
Yeah. The ones that do Vishnu. Anyhow, number 7 or 8 in their 10 incarnations of God is actually Shakyamuni Buddha. So they believe Shakyamuni Buddha is one of the incarnations of God. In other words, they think he's a Jesus Christ. Who also is in their list? So the people that would follow all of Shakyamuni Buddha's teachings specifically, and above everything else, they started calling them Buddhists. The real separation happened once they got kicked out of India. I mean, Hindu and Buddhism in general. And once Islam came in and invaded, and everybody fled, of course, Hindus remained, a lot of them did. But a tremendous part of the northern school of Hinduism fled into the Himalayas, as well as a lot of the Buddhists. Once it went into other countries, except for the earliest countries like Nepal, Nepal does not believe that Buddhism and Hinduism are two different religions. Buddhists in Nepal think they are Hindus. And Hindus in Nepal think they are Buddhist. It's totally true. So we, the quote-unquote intelligent boffins of Buddhism, came up with a name for them. We have a name for those quote-unquote misguided people that believe in Shakyamuni Buddha and his teachings and want to mix it with Hinduism, so we call them Nawari. We in the West would probably translate Nawari Buddhist as El Loco Buddhist. Wackolas. You know, the Wackola Buddhist. Wackola Buddhist. It's a great name, actually. That's what we call Nawaris. Now check this out. As Buddhism spreads, every other group that is not that group are Wackola Buddhist. Chinese were like, hey, those people in the Tibet and what they're doing, that's Wackola. Bhutanese are like, you know what the Chinese do? That's Wackola. The Japanese is like, everybody's Wackola except us. Koreans are like, we don't have anything to do with anyone, because everything's Wackola except us. Vietnamese are like, we're Wackola just like everyone else. Alright, so they're like super accepting of everything. They're some of the coolest group, man. Great people. Forest tradition, everybody's Wackola unless you sit under a tree. If you really want to be a follower of Shakyamuni Buddha, you must accept all of his teachings from the beginning to end. You can't be selective. I'm only going to do yoga. Everything else is stupid. In fact, you couldn't, because yogic vows make you accept every part. You have to train in the Hinayana. You can't disparage it. You have to uphold it. Mahayana and the yoga, all of them equal. This is very, very important. Why is it important? Let's bring it back down to pragmatic teaching here. It's very important because this demonstrates, even within the most holy thing in your life, you still practice a form of discrimination. Dualistic view. Duality. And the Buddha says you can't have that. You're not allowed to be extreme. This is also why a general principle that Buddha says is, do not judge other groups of my own Sangha. Because even in his own lifetime, factions began to happen. And he says, if that group is practicing this thing that I taught, leave them alone. It's none of your business. Japan misunderstood the Buddhist teachings on the Creator God and applied it to everything. That's not the Japanese fault, per se. That happened through that religion of the samurais. What's the name of that religion?
Shintoism?
Shinto. When the Shinto merged with Buddhism, they wanted to annihilate all forms of hope of the lower class, the serfs. So they taught no gods in order to destroy all the local deities and helpers that a farmer could believe in to have hope. And the samurai saw that as a threat to the stability of the warlord that owned that property. Because if they all united and believed that their god was going to help them, it could cause an uprising. So they said, the Buddha says there's no gods. You can't have any anymore. And so the traditional animistic religion of Japan was crushed under the umbrella, falsely, of Buddhism. But that stuck for a couple hundred years. And then, in the 1960s Common Era, Buddhism starts to come to the United States in the form of Japanese Zen. Not Chan, wasn't Tibetan, wasn't forest tradition. It was the Japanese through the beatniks, probably 1950s. Sorry. 1950s through the beatnik movement. Zen comes to America with its no-god mentality. And now Americans have this completely mis-skewed, wrong view of Buddha. The Buddha practiced a god in order to attain his enlightenment, Vajrakalaya. And then tells you, as a devotee, look, at the time of your death, if you can't remember anything else, at least remember Ganesha. At least remember Parvati, Shiva, Shakti, whoever it is. Remember one of them and you'll attain your enlightenment. Remember Krishna. That's what he says. Remember the Devas. And at the time of your death, you can attain liberation. I want you to think about that this week. It doesn't mean you have to go take up a god. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm trying to do is attack the very subtle and sneaky way that this dualistic view is still in your mind. It's still there. You still hold to discrimination, this against that. And unknowing to yourself, you're pitting Shakyamuni Buddha against the rest of the world. We pit it against Christianity. Most Buddhists reject Christianity in the West, and falsely use Buddha as their fulcrum to do it. And that's actually blasphemous. Buddha would not tolerate that. He would reject us for even... He would say, I'm not an extremist. Why are you using my name to do that? In the same way, Christ would reject his name being used to bomb the hell out of some country. Or to start a war. Or to jail, prison, or torture people. He'd say, that's not my name. You can't use me for that. I didn't teach you this. Buddha would not allow it. but we approach it like that. What we need to do is we need to reinvestigate why we're against the things that we're against. And it's probably because your own direct immediate experience of it. That's why you're rejecting it. Don't use him as a scapegoat, because that won't work. Own why you don't like it. If it's reasonable, great. You don't have to like it. If it's unreasonable, you should probably investigate yourself. What is it that your ego is trying to promote or reject? In your own mind, this is where I'm going with it, to bring it all the way back to that term that I was searching for. In your own mind, stop being Buddhist. In your own mind, stop being anything. You're not an American. You're not a Missourian. You're not a... Well, if you were born in California, you're definitely a Californian. But do not hold to anything else.
You can hold to California.
See my discrimination? You see? That's absurd if I say that, right? You're not a Mexican, but if you're born in California, you can be a Californian. Everything else you can't be. But that's how we do it. That's exactly what we do. Don't do that. You cannot be any kind of ist or ism. Let go of all of it. Do not even allow yourself to be human. Unless it's in accord with six realms. Meaning, I'm in a state where I have the faculties in order to attain enlightenment. Yes, that's human. But this form is not. That's just what we name ourselves. So if somebody asks you, oh, you're Buddhist, you should say, no. Sanatam Dharma. That's what I follow. And they'll say, what is that? And you say, never mind.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah. Attack your own dualistic view. Don't let it just sit in there. Go get it. Stop being an ist or an ism. Alright, that's my Dharma talk. And I took all our whole time. So we'll go right to closing prayer because we can't do anything.